like the World Health Organization reckon that by 2030, Ireland will be the most obese country in Europe.
Wow.
So I suppose what I'm trying to do at home and within the brand is that healthy is tasty. You know, we're trying to change the way people snack.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. First off, thank you to everyone who's been listening over the last couple of months. And if you're a new listener, welcome. We've added 1,000 new listeners this month alone. I'm recording this on September 29th and there's still a couple of days left in the month, but it looks like we'll add on 1,000 extra listeners. So thank you very much to everyone who's listening and to new listeners. You're very welcome. Hope you're enjoying it. Feel free to reach out and give me feedback on any of the episodes or people you'd love to see on the podcast. Today, I'm joined by Joe Davey from Joe's Absolute Nutrition, and it's just a pleasure when you get to interview people you've admired and whose products you've used for a very, very, very long time. You can kind of get a sense of people very quickly after meeting them that you know it's going to be a really good podcast, and it is. We chat about a huge range of things, obviously how Joe got started, how she bootstrapped up her business from just herself, just with an idea, how the importance of networking and mentors can play a part. And we list a couple of mentors and networking groups that are really, really valuable. So stay tuned for them in the middle of the podcast as well. And we also talk about wider trends in the nutrition industry and how Ireland is on course to be the most obese country in Europe in a couple of years if we don't change how we're eating. So it's a super show. There's a lot that we pack in. So here's my chat with Joe Davey from Joe's Absolute Nutrition. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
We just had a super laugh off mic there, so we'll kick off with another one. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks very much for the invite. I'm delighted.
It's delighted to be here.
As my husband says, I'm well able to talk, so this is right up my street.
Well, when you handed me the little goodie bag, I knew this was going to be a good podcast, so we're already winning. So thank you for having me. You're hosting me here in your production facility.
Yeah, we have our own bakery out here in Greenogue in Ratcool, and we moved in, I suppose, about in January 2018. So we got the keys that Christmas, December 17, and we just had a blank canvas, so we built our own bakery here to the spec that we've always wanted. So it was a real kind of pivot that Christmas, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to grow and jump, or, you know, just kind of stay small or whatever we were doing? And I suppose because I have the support of my husband in the business, we kind of egg each other on in a good way. So we both did it and moved in here and built what we wanted, got our consultants in and did everything properly from scratch. So once that was all set up, then we were ready to go.
There's a lot of things I want to talk about in there. You talk about work with your husband and the bakery. I'm going to come back to him in a minute.
Yeah.
But what you talked about moving in 2018, how long you guys are on the go?
We started in December 2014. So just that Christmas, me making snacks at home. We have four kids, so snacks are important. Bringing down to my local gym, making for friends, you know, kind of thinking of creative ideas for Christmas gifts and things like that. So that's where it actually started. I kind of very quickly got into it then. And never in my wildest dreams had I planned to open up a business or a manufacturing bakery or anything like that. Mm. That was madness. And I'd worked in the HSE for 14 years before this. So
I was going to ask you, I thought you were a baker or a chef or a cafe owner or something.
No, never. I worked as a PA for a consultant psychiatrist in the Central Mental Hospital in Dundrum. So the National Forensic Service. Mm.
So a tiny bit of a pivot then.
Just a little bit. And that stood to me then in COVID-19, being able to pivot. But yeah, I think where how that affected it is when I worked in Dundrum at break, we used to all go to a little kind of makeshift gym that we had there. And the guys were all into paleo and we were all into eating healthy. And just that's where my interest grew about the paleo stuff. Whereas as a child, I was always baking and doing stuff with my mom. So that's where the kind of baking side came. So putting the two of them together and then having my own kids and just being conscious because, you know, I love sweet treats. I love something healthy, but I don't always want a massive muffin or a croissant if I'm eating someone for a coffee. So just something smaller and healthier. And I suppose just to give people an option because there's so many delicious things when you go into cafes and sometimes you just want something small, something that you're not going to be thinking has ruined your dinner or the workout that you've done earlier that day, just something a bit more health conscious.
I think people are far more conscious of that. I know I am in the last couple of years. I remember when I was in college and we were playing like a huge amount of sport and everything and you'd be super active, but then you'd go home and you might do a pizza and six beers.
Yeah, ruin everything.
You
yeah.
know, and, but you never, I was only thinking about this recently. Like, we used to play football like four or five times a week, and you'd be training twice a day. I had zero knowledge of nutrition. You would just eat whatever was there, sausage and chips in the canteen, great. Whereas now I'm on my fitness pal and I'm logging my calories and my macros and I'm tracking my activity with Whoop. It's, I think there's been a massive shift.
Well, so, we're much more educated now. Hmm. But it's not just the fact that you're wanting to eat healthier. You're also aware, like I always thought, why don't I make something that tastes really nice, but I'm getting vitamins for it, or I'm getting, you know, the goodness out of nuts from it as well, instead of just eating an empty kind of caramel bar with nothing but sugar and fat in there. It'd be nice to get something out of it. Like, the food is so nutritious. So if you put it the right way, I mean, I don't think you could ever have coconut, dark chocolate and honey in a mix and it wouldn't taste nice, you know. There's certain base ingredients, and if you put them together nicely, they're just delicious and beneficial. So I think it's a win-win.
So you were training and you were bringing in snacks, and then when was the moment where you're like, people might actually buy this?
People really liked it, and it sounds really pig at it still even saying it, but I'm good at it. So at the age of 35, I realized what I was good at, you know, making these things and kind of putting flavors together. I was always good at that. So if I made something once, it would turn out right the first time. So there wasn't that much trial and error for me. And I know people might think they're basic enough, but they can go completely wrong and you've wasted a lot of expensive ingredients. So people had started saying to me, you should apply for this new Food Academy program. And back in 2015, I hadn't really heard of it and didn't know what it was. Then I started looking into it, and I knew a chef friend who'd been a chef for about 10 years, and he had tried to get onto it and he hadn't got on. So I was laughing, thinking there's no way I'm ever going to get on this program. But people kept saying it. And at the time we were planning to go to Australia. So I'd left my job in the HSC. We were packing up the four kids and we're going to have a new life.
You were moving to Australia?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's where we'd planned to emigrate, because my husband worked in construction and HSC, four small kids. We didn't see each other a whole lot. Mm. And we just thought, let's move and have a different kind of pace of life. And
why Australia?
For my husband at the time, that's where there was the most work.
Wow.
Over there. So looking back, really, I thought, oh, yeah, that'd be a great lifestyle. But I would have had no support. Like, my parents are very supportive. So obviously it was good.
And the four kids and everything.
Yeah, they were so small. They were 2, 4, 6, and 8 at the time. <That's> that was the
start
time
of a jingle.
Though.
Okay.
Yeah. We didn't go. But anyway, one night after maybe a glass of wine, I applied for this Food Academy program. And the next day I got a call. I described what I do and I had already set up a little Facebook page. Got a call. They invited me onto the program. It was starting in a couple of weeks from that time, and that was it. And the rest of it, I mean, I stayed in the program, met so many cool people, a brilliant network.
Had you started the business at that stage?
I had started making for local gyms.
Okay.
So I had products that I was making. I had my page on Facebook and I was just selling locally to gyms. And then people would order on my Facebook page just through private message. And then I'd find myself in Dublin with the boot of my car open on certain nights of the week, selling snacks and bags and boxes.
Dealing coconut balls on the back of your car.
It was the most dodgy thing ever. It was mortifying, what people loved it. And the same people were coming back every week. Yeah. So I was thinking, God, you know, this is great. We'd moved out of our house. We'd moved in with my parents. Rented the house out.
Then so you were that close to going?
Oh, we were heading. We were just living with my parents for 6 weeks until the visa paperwork came through. Then there was a problem with the visa paperwork with the construction company. And while that was all on delay, I kept going with what I was doing, started the program. Because it was for the first time in my life I wasn't working. I had this bit of spare time.
And what did the program involve?
Just the next step. So, okay, you have some products. Now define your brand and define your packaging. And just really basic stuff. Ideal for someone like me with no business background or no background in anything, really. And meeting other people who are in a similar position. So getting all the information from them and their experiences. And it was really good. And then, long story short, we didn't get the visa. We stayed with my parents for a year and a half until our house lease was up, moved back to the house, and then we were supplying Super Value stores and everything just went mad from there. It accelerated fairly quickly. So
you've touched on something brilliant there, is that a lot of people message me after certain people have been on the pod and they're like, oh my God, that's so amazing. I can never do what they do. How do I start? And the answer is what you just said there. You just do something. You start something. You start making tiny bits. The biggest question I get is, oh, I need 50 grand for my idea. And I was like, but do you though?
Yeah.
Do you really need the 50 grand? Yeah. What's it for? Is it for a premises? Oh, do you need a premises? Could you sell online? And there's always a way of pairing it right back. Like you're a perfect example, making it yourself, selling it yourself, distributing on Facebook. Like there's always a way.
Yeah. And I never imagined where I would be sitting now, like doing podcasts and, you know, winning awards and things like that and having 9 employees. It's just, it wasn't what I had planned. It all just came about. And I think, like you said earlier, that's sometimes the best stories are ones that just come about, you know, weren't set out. But I think if you're someone looking at starting a food business, fundamentally, you have to have your food product ready. You know, you have to have some kind of recipe development and, you know, not just to maybe go in with an idea, but actually have something to show and something that you can work on and tweak.
Mm, I think that's true for any business, no matter what you're doing. Show people.
Yeah.
Like people, we're visual creatures. We have to see things. Yeah. And if you can taste them or feel them.
Like, there's no better thing than tasting, you know.
It's just so immersive. Like PowerPoint's great and all, but like nothing like sitting looking, I'm shaking the package in here. Like nothing shows what it is, like actually feeling it in your hands. It's incredible.
And that was something that always was kind of there with our packaging. We always wanted people to see inside the packaging.
Mm, so I love that actually. I love that thing.
And I mean, protein balls and energy balls look really nice. So why would you cover them up? Yeah. You know, keep them out loose. And when I shop and I want to buy, you know, meat or anything, vegetables, I look inside the pack, you know. I used to really, really like my shopping experiences, go shopping and spend an hour in the shop looking at everything and all the brand and all the packaging and all this kind of stuff. But that's all changed now.
Go on. We'll talk about it briefly. So for anyone listening, way in the future, it's September 2020 and we're in the midst of the COVID, I don't know what you want to call it, pandemic incident. Worldwide phenomenon.
Or just the COVID.
The COVID. The COVID. So what's been happening? I couldn't believe someone was on the pod, I think, last week. And I was like, oh, he said, oh, it's a couple of months now into COVID. And I was like, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. I was like, 6 months.
Yeah.
This is life for 6 months now. So what's, catch me up on the last 6 months of what's been happening.
Well, it feels like this year has been endless, but I suppose 6 months, I don't know, it's kind of gone quick in one way and then dragged in another. How it affected us in the company was that we were doing really, really well last year. We spent a lot of time getting a listing with a corporate food service, so Aramark. We did a Dragon Den style pitch for Aramark last year. It was over a 2-day period. They invited companies in to pitch, panel of 7 or 8, and then presentation and all that. So we actually won that presentation, and we were listed as a key Irish supplier. All the USPs we have, like we manufacture here, we make and bake, we create the recipes, we trial them, we do everything, we deliver them. So a genuine Irish company. And we had audited by Aramark, everything, spent a lot of time working with them, and so easy and nice to work with as well. So in January this year, we started to supply some of their corporates, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Allianz, SAP in Dublin, Galway, really, really well. And then in January, March, that was just all gone completely. All the offices closed. Everyone knows the story. And they're still closed and still people working from home. So that was gone. That affected us. And then we still had our retail stores, so Supervalue, Centrist, Tesco and stuff. But even in that, the way people shops changed. So instead of going in like I used to and browsing around the shop and having an hour to myself, now everyone had a list, shopping list, mask on, gloves on.
You'd queued up for 20 minutes before to get in and you waited for the little green light to go above the door. And
Hateful. So everyone's just going in with their list now and getting straight out of the shop. So if you're bread, milk, tea, beer, you're fine. But I suppose we're a luxury add-on. We're a snack. So our real, you know, our customers who really buy us every week would obviously still get us, but in-store things did change because people were in and out much quicker.
That's interesting because, you know, we all think of COVID and how it affects things and office closures and shopping, but to see how it actually trickles down to a supplier going, oh, the office is closed. Well, that means you're not supplying that office anymore. shops are different. Well, that means they're not buying this anymore. Like, I think it's really interesting. While it's crap as a business, it's really interesting, I think, for people listening to understand all the knock-on effects of the little things.
And I think, like, lots of food producers, we were literally going day by day to see how it would affect us. Like, and like being glued to the news every night at 6 o'clock to see what was coming the next day or that day. So it was weird, surreal, and still a bit surreal what's been going on.
It is. We chatted about that at the start. Like, it's just, it's normal now, which is kind of worrying in terms of we're used to the new strange procedures of filling out forms and can't visit certain places, or if you can, you can only go for a certain time. It's strange. It's a strange world. And you guys were closed for a little while and then bounced back open.
Yeah, because we would always have maybe a 2 week stock balance. So we'd have 2 weeks stock made in advance. So we closed when the initial lockdown came in at the end of that week in mid-March, I think we closed, waited till our stock levels went down a bit just to get the feel of what was going on everywhere. And then we actually got an interview with RT News here. I'm not sure how that came about either.
I was just going to ask you, Joe, you ruined the next question.
But it was very sad because for the first time in 6 years, we'd actually closed. But myself and James have never been able to sit still. You know, we've always been working, even having the kids. We took, you know, maternity leave and straight back to work. So it was very odd and emotional closing that day. And I think I might have put something up about it and said it's temporary. But someone saw it anyway, but RT News came out to interview us as a company being affected by COVID-19. So when that aired, a retailer in Ireland saw it and they had kind of asked us a couple of times to supply them, and we'd always literally been too busy. So now they saw, well, not that busy now. So,
oh, wow.
Let's contact Joe. So obviously we were delighted. It was just some extra work for us and it brought us back in.
That's so interesting how that came about though, that little chain of events.
Yeah, and brilliant. So the girls all live locally. So we rang everyone back up and said, come into work Monday. And that got us just back on the train, I suppose. And then so RT News came back out again to interview us as a success. You know, it did change for a while, but now we're back on it. And in the 3 week period that we'd been off as well, for the first time I had time to focus online, our online store. We had a lovely online store, but we just, with manufacturing, you don't have time to do these things. And it, no matter how many times I try and set aside a Friday afternoon for online, it just doesn't happen because, you know, something will break down or there'll be an extra order in or something like that. So those 2-3 weeks I spent on the online with our guy who works in it is brilliant, Stephen Dunn. He's Lightyear is the name of his company. And he did our Shopify store. So we worked on marketing it, letting people know, okay, the way you shop has changed, you know, you're not going in and out as much, but we're online. And if you order from our store, here's a discount code, we'll deliver it to your door. And also what we saw a lot of was we donated some stuff. We have a lot of PPE gear here because we have high hygiene levels. So we donated loads of gloves, aprons, all that kind of stuff to Talla Hospital.
Okay.
And that sparked a lot of interest in people ordering online our healthy energy snacks for all of their people, their loved ones who are working on the front lines and sending it to them with little notes because no one could see each other in those first 2 months. So utilizing Irish online stores like that was really good and really important. And we were getting a chance to highlight it by being on the news and saying about the online stores.
It shows you the importance of doing something, though. I think a lot of people are taking, oh, well, it's awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Instead of just like going, okay, what can we do? Yeah. Can we do anything?
My husband will say it's because I'm stubborn, you know, I'm not going to sit down and not do anything. If there's a way to do something else, well, then I'll do something.
I thought he was
going to
say you're such a brilliant marketer.
Yeah. All self-learned. That really worked well and such a nice. And then when people receive something from somebody from our online store, of course, they're going to tag you and post about. So it really works well. So that went on for us as well. And then ITV saw us on the news, on the Irish news. So ITV phoned me one Saturday or something and said they'd love to come over and interview me in my bakery. kind of the story was kind of like how things are across the water in Ireland. Okay. You know, they're as affected as we are, or they're still going and companies are still working. So
they'd seen you on RTE, was it?
Yeah. I'm posting on Twitter and stuff. So they flew over.
Wow.
It was all crazy. Like, I have relatives in the UK and they're, I haven't heard from them in years. The next fall, they were messaging us saying, were you just on the, was that you on the ITV news? And we were like, yes, it was.
That's incredible. I think people discount and don't kind of acknowledge how powerful traditional media still is.
Oh, mad. But what it's it incredible. Did for us was those three appearances on the news were like our online store went mad.
Really?
Because you're reaching people, like I do all my social media myself. I've no marketing degree. I do the best that I can do and I put a lot of time and work into it. Mm. I think I get across pretty much what the store is about, but I don't get the personal side across as much, you know.
It's hard. It's nearly a full-time job in itself.
Absolutely. I mean, and we make everything ourselves, but when I'm in there, I mean, I don't have my phone out taking videos. I probably should a little bit more.
It's probably hard though with all the, like you give me a lovely tour of the whole place. It's class to see it actually in action.
And really smell amazing. Everything.
Yeah, it's amazing, but it must be hard because you've such high standards that it must be hard to be like, oh, hold on out. Don't put that in there. I just need to take a quick photo.
Yeah. And you don't go around carrying your phone because obviously they're unhygienic. Mm. But I really need to put a bit more focus into that to let people in and see what we do and how we make them. And they're all very much handmade and hand done. I mean, I know they all look absolutely perfect, but they are handmade. Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting, though, just on that, to realize that, you know, we see this everywhere. We see it in Super Value. I was going to say Super Quinn there, not for a while. Super Quinn or Super Value, Tesco, Fresh is somewhere I used to get them all the time. And you just imagine this big, massive company. You don't imagine the owner in there baking them. I think that's so cool. I think that's such a unique thing to realize that there are Irish companies who have owners that are still in the kitchen, in the bakery making them.
But for me, that's the only way it would ever be. I've kind of split role now. Like I'm upstairs a lot more than I would like to be, but there's definitely every week I'm down in the bakery. And that's because I mentioned to you earlier when we were laughing, humor is very important. And especially in the last few months, so I was like to crack a few jokes and being in there with the girls, that's exactly how you can go on. You know, you can mess and joke. And I mean, there's always ball jokes going on in there. They never get old. and then you're trying to keep up with what you're doing. So it's a certain, stress. But then being upstairs is a completely different stress because it's more serious. It's a little bit less creative and more deadline orientated and sales, like sales are difficult, you know, so doing all that. But I definitely love being in the bakery.
Take me back then to you finished the academy. What happened? What was the trajectory? Because I think a lot of people are like, oh, I'd like to start a food business. I just don't know how I'd get from making them in my little kitchen to seeing them on a shelf.
I suppose I tell you, if you're going to start a food business, you have to be prepared to give all of your time, absolutely all of it, especially in the first 5 years. When you're at home, you're still working on the business. You're still doing something online or trying to think of this or trying to get to the next step. And there's always a competitor who just keeps getting there one step ahead of you all the time. Or there's someone else who's coming up behind you and literally doing exactly what you're doing in exactly the same way. So you're always, like for me, I thought, okay, I'm going to start making something. So it has to be better than what I think is there. And it has to be a little bit different. There's no point in doing something if it's the same as someone who's already on the shelf. That's just not going to work. So when I finished the Food Academy, we did the Advanced Food Academy program then with Super Value, Borbea, Local Enterprise. And that kind of geared us for going national with Super Value. So this was great. We were reaching stores down the country, Cork, Donegal, everywhere that we hadn't been reaching. But also to go national, you're paying more margin. There's more fees, there's more costs. Mm. So, I mean, you have to have all that clear in your head. You have to ask questions. You have to be ready for it. And it's a big jump going from a local supplier in Dublin, Leinster to servicing the whole country. Mm. Obviously, it costs a lot more money. But it's worth it to see your stuff, your product all over the country and people getting to enjoy it. And it's payback for all the hard work that you've put in. I mean, it's an achievement. And so once you've done that, then you're thinking, okay, we need to you know, pay for this bakery here. We need to pay for everything else, pay for the staff, pay for the vans, pay for the poultry, marketing, the list goes on and on. So then you need more sales. So your job is sales from that point on. And that's why the food service contract last year with Aramark was so good, because it was local. I mean, there's enough offices in Dublin to keep you busy for a long time.
There was, anyway.
And we were in the airport in Marquette. That was a brilliant account. But it all dried up in March. So slowly but surely, I hope that these people will come back on. I mean, we have a great niche with the colleges as well. It's an energy snack. It's healthy. It's natural ingredients. So for anyone studying and college students trying to eat well.
Yeah, you're not getting that horrible sugar crash.
So all these things. So it literally never stops. And then once you've got another listing, maybe you'll have another overhead or another van. So you just have to keep going and keep going. Literally snowballs. So you have to grow with it and
you
got to
feed the monster. Like the more, it's interesting though, because I think people look at people like yourselves and kind of go, oh, they've met it. There they are now. Look, they're everywhere. I think I'm guilty of this as well. When you see something on a shelf in the supermarket, your brain is like, oh, wow, look, big brand, you know, and they forget that behind that, there's a team, often a small team, working super hard. How did it get
there? Literally, you'd be nowhere without your team. I mean, one or two people couldn't reach a level where you're on all the supermarket shelves in Super Value or whatever. But it is like people, my own neighbors, I think they think I'm rich. They think that we're, you know, millionaires because we have a brand and we've been on the news and, you know, all this silliness. But they also see you're going out every morning at 6:30 and you're not coming back till 6:30. Yeah. So you're working weekends. You have very little time. And run your own business. Anyone who does knows that there are no holidays. You don't get a break. I mean, and especially me and James working in it together, it's probably worse, because unless we holiday separately, we're both gone at the same time. So
go on, tell me about that. What is it like working and living with someone? Is that a difficult balance?
Well, it was a shock to the system because we didn't see each other, you know, at all. And I spent a lot of years, especially when the kids were small, it was very, very difficult. And I felt sometimes like a lone parent because, I mean, he wasn't off swanning playing golf. He was working hard to try, like we'd built a house, we had four kids, we had two cars, you know, all the usual pressures that everyone has. So it was very lonely. And I was in my 20s and early 30s at this point. So it really wasn't what I wanted. You know, I wanted more time with James. And then this all came about and then we were with each other 24/7. So then I still wasn't happy.
That's a big flip though. That's a big flip. I'm not sure everyone could do that.
Well, it was hard. Definitely in the first year. And then it was difficult because at the same time that James kind of came in, we were moving from our old bakery into this bakery. So there was a lot of pressure anyway. Money, cash flow, trying to get things done quickly, like when we moved in here, it was a blank canvas. There was no bakery. It was just an empty warehouse. So with the help of our friends, they're all electricians, plumbers and everything. They came down and we built this bakery in 6 weeks, which was massive. And then James is so handy at all that kind of construction stuff. So he was here day and night working with that. But then, so that was added stress on top of trying to work together and then live together. But we felt after a year or so, we kind of fell into what his side of things are and my side. So we've a clear division and we try not to.
Is that key? Is that the important? Is that the what makes it work?
Yeah. I mean, he makes decisions about his side and I make decisions about mine, because we've always had the same kind of view and vision of what we wanted out of life, but we disagree like cats and dogs over things as well. So and we're always trying not to do that in front of the team. So
okay. And you see you in the office urgent meeting. Yes.
Or I am guilty. This will make people laugh. Sometimes we're up in the office and there's one other person there as well. My sister-in-law actually does the accounts. And sometimes I'll text them and say,
"You are so dead when we get home."
So we have to have the phones on silent when that's going on.
But it's probably a push pull, though. It probably is. You know, the benefits. You know, once you find that sweet spot, that balance.
Yeah, and James has had to upskill and learn things because, like I said, we know business background. So he's done a brilliant job. He does all the finance, the new listings, the setups, the logistics, looks after the vans, and I look after the bakery, the girls in there, the marketing. The artistic stuff I tell him I look after.
The creative side. Yeah. Did you, so you never grew up wanting to be an entrepreneur? You never grew up going, I really want my own business?
I did. I had always said that I would love to have had my own business, and so did James. Mm. But we wanted our family more at a young age. So we're together since we were 17 and 19.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so family was always kind of number one for me. So we got married and then we had our son when I was 25. So we were very, very young. Yeah. And then I thought, you know, when I have my family, then I can focus on what I want to do. But I never had any idea what it would be. I had an idea a few years ago of baby food and manufacturing baby meals because, like, I was an expert with four. Like, there was only 2 years. I had the four of them in 6 years. So, I mean, there was ice cube dinners in the freezer was full of them, you know.
Okay.
And all that kind of stuff. But I mean, it wasn't the time. So when the time did come around, it was snacks and it was that kind of thing that I was interested in.
It's funny though, there never is a right time.
No.
There's never that perfect time. And I think that's important as well to realize, like, oh, when this happens, I'll start my business, or when I get this.
Well, that's really what I've learned over the last 5-6 years. You have to literally jump. Mm. You have to just say, right, let's do it. Let's buy it. A few weeks ago, both of our vans were down. They were both broke down at the same time. It was a disaster. And we just needed to buy a new van. And I was thinking, well, there's a pandemic going on, so I don't really want to buy a brand new van right now. But then just thinking about it, you're thinking, well, there's going to be a warranty with that van. So it makes sense to just go and do it. But if you pull back every time you had a decision, it's just not going to work.
I think that paralysis, especially in the early stages, is the hardest. It's when you're like overanalyzing everything.
Yeah.
And you're second guessing yourself. I guess that's handy with James as well. You've always got that person to bounce things off.
Yeah.
That's definitely handy.
Yeah. And so, I think there's so many challenges you face with a business, especially in food retail, because you're dealing with so many other people. You're dealing with so many retailers, so many buyers all the time. So I think you learn how to make decisions fairly quickly and not worry about them too much, because there's no point. And then 2 weeks later, you're not even thinking about that same thing. So it's moved on to some other challenge or some other thing.
Yeah, it's always that question. Will you be thinking about it in 6 months' time? No,
absolutely.
You won't.
Well, in this type of game, you won't be thinking about it next week. So there'll be something else there.
Was it hard? I'm just sort of thinking about something there you said. Was it hard when you went national? Was it hard to get the brand recognition? Because obviously you'd been in Dublin, Leinster for a good few years at that stage. Was it hard then to make the connection between kind of you and the brand?
It was, because like we don't have a marketing budget or a massive marketing budget at all. You can only do what you can do with your iPhone. And in fairness, that's how I've run my business for 6 years, through one little iPhone. And you know, a certain amount of influencers and people that'll do you a favor and share your stuff, and that's all brilliant. But when I went national, people in Cork didn't know who we were. You know, up here in Dublin was a different kind of story. But SuperValu are very good in promoting new companies and promoting people who've just gone national. So they did a great job with that. And they still do. I mean, if you contact SuperValu and say, oh, I'm thinking of a competition or anything like that, they're always willing to help support anybody and Centra as well. And even when lockdown came in March and April, SuperValu were first on the phone, you know, to see, okay, let's have some webinars. What can we do? How can we all work together and all that kind of stuff, and promoting Irish? So there's always a way. And I think not being afraid to ask people is important. Especially as well on LinkedIn. If you're after a buyer or you're after something, keep poking them or putting yourself in front of them, or, you know, if you don't ask, you won't get. So
That's how we connected.
Yeah.
Now I know how we end up at the podcast. I use that all the time. I have to say, I use LinkedIn.
Putting my posts in front of you.
Yeah. I use that all the time to connect with people on LinkedIn and Twitter, and just kind of watching what they're doing and kind of following their story. It's a great way of just making a long term relationship with people. Was it always the plan to go direct to stores? Like, was it always the plan to have a nationwide network, or did you ever think of setting up your own cafe or restaurant and doing this?
It was never the plan, actually, to go into food retail.
Okay. Here we go.
Well, I think if I was doing it all over again, like, it is difficult. It is quite challenging. There's lots of margins. There's lots of logistic problems. I think for any new food company, logistics is probably one problem that you're always going to face. Okay, there's a lovely store in Cork who wants my product. How do I get it to them? I can't drive it down once a week. It's not viable. So that's always a difficulty. So I never in my head planned, and I didn't have any experience with business or working with logistics or retailers. But I had always had a plan in my head that I'd love my own cafe. Mm. And that's something that I still love to do. I'd still love to have my own cafe, but I wouldn't trade what I've done for the last 6 years for anything, because the experience and growth and development personally and in business that's taking place is immense. Like, it's crazy.
You should do Joe's pop-up store.
I've actually won a couple of business awards.
Oh, really? Well, I'm sitting, you've strategically placed me on the wall of glory here. I'm looking at all your awards behind
That's
you.
That's my subtle.
Very subtle. Yeah,
yeah. And I laugh with my kids. I never won a medal in school for anything. Didn't play sports. We lived in the middle of nowhere and never, literally not one single medal. And now I've got a couple of food awards.
I'll put up an Instagram before I leave. How do you learn? Okay, you were 14 years in the HSE.
Yeah.
How did you learn to become an entrepreneur? Like, what happened?
Well, it was time for change. Like, I'd been in there a long time, loved the job, met lovely people. But there was always something I was thinking, I can do something more. I can do something else here, but I just didn't know what. And then my mother is a great believer in things sometimes are put in front of you or you're led in a certain direction. And that's exactly what happened.
It's that old Irish thing, what's far, you won't pass you.
Oh, and it's really true. It sounds ridiculous, but it definitely is.
I think you have to be looking for it, though. I think that's the difference between you and most people, is that you're looking. I think most people are like getting opportunities thrown at them left, right and centre, but they're just closed.
Yeah, you have to be wide open to doing something and jumping outside the box. I used to go to a gym a couple of years ago and he used to say, nothing ever happens in your comfort zone, jump outside the box and all that kind of stuff. And I used to be just going, oh my God, when's this class over?
No more burpees.
But that is so true. James laughs at me sometimes. Tomorrow I'm doing a Zoom kind of presentation with UCD, the innovation course in there. And I've gone in and spoke with them before last year, just about business and entrepreneurship, which sounds crazy to me because I still see myself as a mom of four kids who just goes to work every
day. That's funny. That's interesting. You don't see yourself as that.
As an entrepreneur, no, it seems weird. But tomorrow doing this thing, so I said yes a few weeks ago. And I always get really excited and I go home and tell James, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm going to speak with UCD or DCU or IT Tall or whatever about entrepreneur or online or whatever it may be. And James always looks at me and I'm like, I know. And then a week before it comes, I'm like bricking it and thinking, how do I get myself into these things? But it's excitement and fear. So it's, I suppose, me putting myself outside my comfort zone. Absolutely. And then once I've done it, I feel exhilaration.
That feeling is so good, though. Yeah. I always do the exact same. I always, if people ask me to do things, I was like,
And I suppose,
because if I think about it, I'll be like, I'll have to prepare something. What'll I talk about, though? I don't know what I'll talk about. I've nothing really to say. And you go through all this, whereas I just go, yes.
Yeah.
I just mesh back, go, yeah, done.
Someone told me a few years ago, always say yes and worry later.
It's true.
That's what I do. And I suppose that's personal growth, doing stuff that you don't really want to do, but you kind of will feel great afterwards.
I think it also comes with a little bit of experience as well in terms of you can back it up now. You've got, established 2014, you can walk into any shop in Ireland and see your stuff.
Well, if I can't talk about my own manufacturing, my own brand, well then there's something wrong. So I think that's the good side as well about doing everything, because we know every aspect of it inside out. We know the manufacturing, we know the logistics, we know the accounts, all kinds of the marketing, everything.
And I think it's great to see colleges bringing people like you in, though. I think that's what we need more of in terms of colleges need more practitioners, need more entrepreneurs, need more business people going in who are actually running businesses. I think there's a lot of academics and a lot of stuff been taught off books when it really, as you know,
it's experience.
99% of what you've learned in the last 6 months wouldn't come out of a book, or the theory would have, but the practice was totally different.
Yeah. And I went to speak in UCD last year as someone who didn't do a marketing degree or a business degree, but has a business. That's successfully running. So
I think that's important. And it shows you too, you don't need all these qualifications.
No, and it felt good. I mean, it felt nice. Like, obviously, I did do other courses and stuff, but nothing to do with food or entrepreneurship. Mm. So it felt good to be standing there and trying to impart anything that I felt they might think was useful before they open up their own businesses.
What, when you were going through the kind of initial stages, what were the biggest challenges you faced? Say when you're on the program and just leaving it, what were the biggest difficulties you faced?
Well, again, logistics. You know, you have a really good product and then you have the packaging. You have it shelf ready. Just how do I get it on shelf now? How do I get it there? And the fees that are involved in that. Whatever fees you think are involved, you need to allow for more because there's going to be something else there.
A friend of mine has a great saying about business. He's like, however long you think it'll take and however long you think it'll cost, treble it. And it's so, I always think of that. I always laugh. I was working on something this morning, totally separate. And I was just, that was in my head going, treble the cost here.
Yeah. Well, I feel really old because all of these sayings I heard as a child growing up now, they all mean something to me. So I know I've reached a certain age.
Yeah. Well, the cliches are true. You realize now they're true for a reason.
And they came about because it's experience. Mm. Now, other people went through the same thing. So they created these, you know, sayings that mean exactly what you're going to face 5 years down the line.
You do need a bit of naivety, though, I think, when you start. You do need Absolutely. That kind of like, ah, no, it's going to be different for me.
Yeah. If you knew everything, you probably wouldn't do it.
So many people say that, is that if I knew now and I knew then, I'm not sure I'd have the energy.
Yeah. But I think as a person, I'm a completely different person than I was 6 years ago, because so much has been packed into the 6 years. We've met people, we've traveled, we've done loads of things all to do with this business. And we've spent more time together than we ever had, you know, so things, I think it's been fantastic.
But that's class to be able to say that. I love when people say that, is like, oh, I've changed so much.
And it's not over yet. That's what I keep saying.
But it used to be a bad thing. Oh, you've changed. And now it's like, I love when people say that, because I'm like, yes, you should be changing all the time.
I had this at home a few days ago. We moved our four kids' school about 3 years ago, so they were all in primary together, and we moved them to a different local primary school, and so they were obviously really nervous. But I was saying to them, and even the other day I was saying, remember, you know, looking back now, you never change for something worse, you always change for something better. So that's the way you have to look at it. Change is for the good.
I like that.
Yeah,
but I think when you're young though, that's so scary.
Yeah.
Everything is that little bit more daunting. Oh, what about any friends? And
but they're lucky they had the four of them together. So, I mean, I was saying, well, at least you'll have each other.
What's that balance been like in terms of, you know, four kids and your husband and yourself all kind of enmeshed in the business?
I'll be honest, at the beginning, it was very difficult. And they did miss out, because as selfish as it sounds, when you're trying to you know, create a business and get it to actually work. Because at any point, year one, year two, year three, year four, it could be gone, you know? So it had to be number one, which is a terrible thing to say. And then family was number two. And the only way that we survived that is that we have our parents. So my parents live next to us. And they're very supportive. So they're there for the kids, you know. But there'd be time when myself and James were working at home, two different laptops, 1 o'clock every morning, up at six. And while you're there, you're not present. So the kids are just kind of left to their own devices, and they were very young. So I think, you know, when you feel bad about it, I'm thinking, and people have said it to us, anyone who knows the kids, they're not demanding kids. They don't look for anything. They just want your time, you know. They just want the simple things. So now that things are a bit more settled in the last year or two and moving into the new bakery, there's more family time. And they've all gotten a little bit older. You know, if you're starting a business, your kids are really small and you're freaked out and it's just so unmanageable, they will get a little bit older and it does get a little bit easier. So stick with it, but it is difficult in the beginning, especially when you're four. I mean, I don't know. I can imagine it's as difficult if you've two, but it's a busy.
I think it's refreshing honesty, though, because I think people tend to look back and go, yeah, no, it was fine. You know, we met at work. They hear that so much. Yeah. Oh, we met at work.
And that's ideal. But yeah, I mean,
but tell the truth, like, be honest with people. I think that's important. I think it's.
And they have asked us a few times, when are you going to sell this business and have time at home with us? And but I think now the two older guys, they were 8, 10, 12, No, they were 2, 4, 6, and 8 when we started. Now they're 8, 10, 12, and 15. And now the older guys have, they understand work ethic. They see us working, you know, and that's how we have cars and we have our house and we go on holidays. And
that's ingrained in them now, seeing you guys work like that. And they're probably old enough now to kind of acknowledge the business and probably appreciate it more.
Well,
and kind of
sure, acknowledge it. We got about 300 or 400 new stands just before COVID-19. So the two older guys down here one Saturday for the whole day packing the stands, making them, you know, putting them together.
I'm looking at them here. They're on the table in front of us. They're class. They're so cool.
Or my older son, when he's, if there had been a day off school, you know, he'd be in the bakery at 7 with the girls and he'd finish at 3:30 because he has to understand how important money is and where it comes from. And, you know, we don't, it doesn't magically appear in our accounts every week. You have to do something to get it.
That's an incredible grounding, though, instead of like going off and working in a shop or a cafe where he just turns up, clocks in, clocks out.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting a deeper understanding of what it actually means to run a business.
And because it is fast paced in the bakery, you know, the girls will have him running up and down and he'll come home exhausted. But then, and then I'm like a typical old Irish mother. I'm like, well, that's how tired I am every day when I get home and start picking up after and making dinners. But it is important that they understand life. And if, you know, he wants to do something in college, he has to work hard and ensure that he can get it. Do his best.
Will he set up his own business, do you think?
I don't know if he will. He's into engineering and stuff like that. But I've told him there's a job here in the bakery.
he's probably the last thing he wants after all the summers.
But they do realise, you know, how hard, and then that it doesn't end when you come home. You know, we'll be on our laptops then later on, or there'll be a call. I was doing spec sheets all day Saturday last weekend. So, I mean, it's busy.
Food business seems like a tough, tough business. From the outside looking in, from having chatted to a lot of people that operate either direct food businesses in terms of cafes, bars, restaurants, or food businesses like yourselves, it seems like a hard business.
I think it is. It's rewarding because people love your food. So the feedback you get is amazing. And the fact that you sell every week into these stores, like sometimes I'm thinking, I'd love to meet the people who buy these snacks every week in town, you know, where I'm not in there. And I've often been in shops looking at our product and people will come up and, you know, I'm just standing there as a mom shopping, but they'll come up and take our product and put it in their trolley. And I'm fascinated thinking, I wonder what do they do? And I wonder what, where they work. And you
that's
know,
cool. That kind I think of that's thing a very really, big buzz to see people that just is a picking buzz. Them up.
Yeah. And there's a lot in it. There's a lot more in food business than I ever expected. I mean, there's things we do that I would never have imagined. And even my family, my brothers, they'll pick up one of our tubs or our two packs and they were like, such a great, simple idea. And I'm like, oh my God, such a year gone into that labeling, that packaging, a year's work gone
that
into
that color. I took 2 days to pick that color of blue.
Oh, it's crazy.
But I think, yeah, I think you only appreciate that. I was literally going through that myself this week, designing something new. And you spend so long looking at it going, should it be a lighter green? You're like, and
not just the colour, but on the back, like barcodes, that's a whole, you know, world in itself.
Yeah.
Then the FSAI, like the legislation for allergens and, you know, being on top of all that and constantly refreshing it and making sure you're up to date with everything. And
how do you keep on top of that actually? Because I was listening to a good podcast coming out and they were talking about different ideas. One of them was, it was for regulations in the States about a specific type of thing. But how do you keep on top of all the regulations and being compliant with everything?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's just one website, the FSAI, the Food Safety Authority of Ireland. Okay. They have all the information you need to know there. Okay. But also we work with a consultant in food safety. So before we laid out this bakery, she came in and we laid it out together. So it's right, you know, it's done properly because you don't want an EHO calling to your door and saying that sink is in the wrong place. That needs to be somewhere else, you know, so you have to have everything done properly. So outside consultation is important as well. And then you get a lot of advice from your local EHOs. So
what's an EHO?
Your environmental health inspector. So they'll come in and inspect any cafe or food production and make sure your hygiene standards are up to scratch. So that's a couple of times a year. And you'll learn from them and they'll learn from you. So
the advice is just to kind of do your research beforehand, you know, exactly, and reach out, ask people. You talked about that earlier and I kind of want to touch back on that again. You talked about asking people. That's a really simple, like, but so important.
it's underutilized. People are afraid to admit that they want to ask something or that they don't know it already. Mm. But I've no problem asking. We've McCambridge's bread is around the corner here in Green Oak from us, and Michael McCambridge, I mean, it's such a well-known family business, established quality, you know. So he's been over here, I've been over there, we meet at everything that we go to, and he's like almost like a mentor to me if I'm stuck on something. He's easy to talk to. He has the experience, he'll easily impart his experience, you know, so he's really good to have that type of person in your network that you can rely on. And he understands it because he does food manufacturing. So there's no better person. And then there's all the food networks, like Dublin Food Chain is a great network to be involved in because, I mean,
Dublin Food Chain.
Yeah, it's run by James Burke. I mean, he has seminars, webinars, he brings in speakers, he gets you in front of buyers. I mean, it's just
what is it, like a business group or?
Yeah, just a forum for people in Dublin who own food businesses or run food businesses.
So, I'll pop that in the show notes for people so they can check that out.
And James has been in it. James and his team have been working in Irish food for years, so he's got great experience as well. And then there's a lot of support from our local enterprise. They have a women's networking group, so it's not necessarily food. It's, you know, you could meet someone there who's marketing or design or something that you're
looking
for.
What's that called? Because someone actually asked me this week.
News, it's the Network of Enterprising Women, South Dublin. That's the one I'm in, our local enterprises, South Dublin. So, but all the local enterprises have their own individual groups.
I'll put that in the show notes as well, because two different people have asked me about it, but a female only networking group, and I was like, I'm sure it exists. And Pamela Laird, who'd been on the podcast a few times, she had mentioned one before, so I'll put that in the show notes, because I think that's really valuable to know that this stuff exists.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you talked about having a mentor there. Is that important?
Well, as part of the Food Academy, you will have different business mentors and food mentors, and that's important. And they are mentors, and with local enterprise, they offer mentorship as well. And I suppose the mentors could be broadly, you know, business mentors, whereas someone like Michael McCambridge around the corner is exactly what I'm doing. So he's my, you know, a specific person that I can ask for advice or, you know, quality. Like for COVID-19, for instance, we have a big COVID response plan here in place in the bakery, just to ensure our safety, to make sure everything going out into stores is completely safe. And because of the quality standard we had already, we didn't have to change that much. We just had to put, you know, it into a policy and make it more formal and add in stuff like extra sanitization and all that kind of stuff. But they had done the exact same thing over in McCambridge's already. Okay. So me firing mine over to him to have a look over and make sure I'm not missing anything, all that kind of stuff is you can't buy it. Like,
I think that's invaluable. Like, not being afraid to just talk to people. That's one thing I've learned since starting the podcast. This will be episode 74. And like, just talking to so many people.
Yeah.
And people are so willing to give up their time and be so honest and frank. I'm always blown away by how honest and frank people are.
Yeah.
But we're always kind of afraid.
Well, Michael McCambridge ensures me that I don't pester him, but I'm not sure. I think he's being nice.
But I think once you're giving something back as well.
Yeah.
Once you're kind of, it's a two-way street. You're not just kind of like ringing up every 6 months when something's on fire and you've got a massive problem.
Yeah. And then there's always people like Guaranteed Irish, Love Irish Food. These are all organisations that are there to help food businesses as well. So, I mean, Bord Bia as well are very supportive of Irish companies. So, I don't know, if you were stuck on something on any day and you didn't know who to call, I mean, you ring anyone in Bord Bia and they'll put you in touch with someone who can help, or, you know, Love Irish Food or Guaranteed Irish, they'll know someone who does something similar to you and they'll put you in touch. So the network is always there. You just have to ask for it.
I think that's incredible advice. I'm going to make a note to pull that out as a quote.
Yeah. Now actually people ask me for advice, so I always think that's a great compliment.
But that's cool. And it's nice probably to be able to pay it back a little bit as well in terms of just going, well, this is what I did and speaking from experience. So what's the plan? What are we looking at in the next kind of like, what's the big hairy goal for Joe's?
I think everyone's plan now is, I don't know what people's plans are with COVID-19 and everything, but it's definitely not going to define our business or end our business or anything like that. Like, we still have a lot of NPD development that we want to work on.
What is NPD?
New product development. Mm. So we're lucky in the sense that I do it all here. We don't need to get companies in to do it because I kind of like all that kind of stuff, being in the bakery and putting stuff together and coming up with something. And we have two new products that are already ready to launch. So we'll hopefully do one in October, November, and then we'll do one maybe in January.
And how do you come up with them?
I just go by what I like.
I can almost see you eating them in your head. I now don't understand.
No, I suppose I've learned something in the last 5-6 years. So looking at market research, looking at the market space, looking at snacking, getting lots of information from Board BA. I mean, you have to know what you're doing. And all these new trends and things that come about and, you know, insects being the new protein snack and all this kind of stuff. It's all brilliant and fascinating, but there are certain things that sell. There are certain flavors that sell. There are certain things, you know, that will always work in whatever form. So that's what I look at mostly. I'm not saying anything else.
I won't push you too much. I am going to ask you when we stop recording. What trends are you looking at? You don't have to give away what you're about to release, but what trends are interesting to you, even in the broader food space?
I was just looking at something earlier this morning that I was doing, and like the World Health Organization reckon that by 2030, Ireland will be the most obese country in Europe.
Wow.
I mean, that's mad. So I suppose what I'm trying to do at home and within the brand is that healthy is tasty. You know, we're trying to change the way people snack. So you don't have to eat like, you know, biscuits and cakes and all to feel that you're treating yourself. You can eat something, like I said earlier, that tastes really nice, but has a bit more benefit to you. So, I mean, obviously people say to me all the time, oh, is there calories in your balls? I'm like, well, yes, there is. They're made from nuts and seeds and dates and honey. So there are calories there, but it's far better than eating a digestive biscuit. You know, it's a different, it's nuts versus margarine. So it's a completely different source of fat. And I think just the whole thing as well that we said earlier about our snacks, you have one ball with a drink and you're satisfied, you know. Before I started all this, I love Cadbury's chocolate. I'd eat it all the time, used to, but I'd have a dairy milk. And then if I had another cup of tea an hour later, I'd nearly have another dairy milk or a club milk. You know,
I don't buy it anymore. I can't because I just find if I do, I just keep eating it. Don't know if I have a sweet tooth. I probably do. But now I just don't buy it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I will go, oh.
Or you open the roses at Christmas or Quality Street or whatever, and you'll find yourself eating and eating and eating. And that's the sugar, I think. Yeah, it's so addictive. Whereas if you eat something made from natural kind of flavors and sweeteners and nuts and seeds are so filling. So you can only eat so much. Like, so overall, there is calories, but far better for you, and you'll probably eat less and be fuller quicker. And all of our snacks are slow release energy. So it's a different type of thing. Like our chia energy bombs, if you crumble one of those into your porridge oats, warm porridge, it melts in so nicely because it's honey, it's chia seed, it's coconut, makes it like crunchy and coconutty. It's just really nice. Or into your yogurt or something. Just this, I think people need to snack a bit more, you know, ever.
I think don't view it as a splurge. I think that's the biggest thing. People view it as, oh, I'll just wait till 4 o'clock. And I always find it funny when people are on a health kick and instead of like, they'll have a Diet Coke and a smaller can of smaller bar of chocolate.
I know.
Yeah. I find it so funny. I'm like, but that's not the, oh, don't bother.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it is getting better though. I think people are so much more in tune about, you know, nature and sea swimming and going to the gym and triathlons and, you know, being hiking and, you know, far
and,
more.
And you need to eat properly. Like if you're that active, we did a lot of events and stuff with our trailer or our portable trailer we bring around with us. We do a lot of triathlon events, jiu-jitsu events, CrossFit events and stuff like that. And these people are pushing themselves so hard. Yeah. So you're training really hard. You're working all week. You're fitting in family. You have to eat well or you're just going to run yourself down. So having a snack and a nougat bar is not going to do you any favors. You know, you need to be putting in proper fuel into your body and balance. I'm not telling everyone to only eat healthy, but just to be a bit more clever about snacking, because according to Board BA, people snack 2.5 times a day now.
Right.
That's the average.
I think being at home as well. I think people, I actually thought it'd be better. I was like, oh, everyone's going to be cooking now and everyone's going to be so healthy. It seems to be worse.
Yeah.
It seems to be people are just eating more bad stuff.
Well, it's easy to kind of rustle up, you know, cakes and things like that. They're quite easy to make, and maybe a little bit less expensive. So if you're buying in ingredients,
that's the thing
to
that
make
shocks
balls,
me.
Yeah,
that shocks me is how cheap bad food is.
Yeah. I mean, like we have to put 21% VAT now onto our snacks, which are health snacks. They're made from raw ingredients. Yeah. We don't add any sugar in, whereas biscuits and cakes are only 13.5%. So,
really?
I mean, they have it backwards as far as I can see, because health snacks so I've written to all our local councillors and anyone I can think of, and we've had a company try and work on it with us, but we just get nowhere.
Stuff like that is such a big problem, though.
Especially if the WHO is correct, and by 2030, Ireland's going to be the most obese country in Europe.
That's scary.
A bit mad.
And did they say why? What's the underlying factors in that?
The WHO?
Yeah.
I think it's just convenience food. Convenience food is so easily available. Mm. People, Irish people are not cooking from scratch as much. If we don't think about COVID-19, obviously people are doing it more now. But up to that point, I mean, convenience food is so cheap and so easily available, and it's all high in sugar, fat, salt. So, I mean, cooking from scratch and all that kind of stuff is better. It's not always possible when people are time poor, but I mean, I think if that's the trajectory that we're on for 2030, we need to kind of pull back and start thinking about the way we're feeding, and especially our kids. I saw as well, there's another START campaign, I think it was. I've put it up on my blog today. I'll have a check on it. But they were saying that parents especially are much more informed about what their kids are eating now. So they're kind of starting to come away from the mass brands, which are higher in fat and higher in this, that and the other. And they're trying to instead substitute with kind of smaller niche brands and have a healthier kind of option that still tastes, you know, sweet and nutritious. I mean, my kids love our snacks. It's biased. They've been brought up with them, and that's what they know. I mean, they love cakes and biscuits and chocolate as well, but they love the snacks. And I think once you're getting into eating kind of in that way, maybe they feel better for it. I don't know.
They're scary statistics. So I was chatting to my local butcher there a few weeks ago, and I was just doing the usual, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh yeah, flying during COVID, literally was open 12 hours a day and it was flying. And he goes, I teach a lot of people though. And I was like,
yeah,
what do you mean? He goes, well, if people come in, they'd be like, can I get 2 chicken breasts? Now, how do I cook them?
Yeah.
And I was like, you're pulling my leg. He's like, genuinely. Yeah. He's like, I had people in their 30s and 40s come into me and go, how do you cook a steak?
I know.
That blew it's my scary. Mind, though.
But I don't know why someone hasn't, you know, in school, in secondary school now, my two older boys, they do home ec. And they're coming home. My younger guy's just gone into first year, and it's the same as Evan was 3 years ago. So they're coming home. What did you make today? Oh, we made fairy cakes.
Yeah.
We made beans on toast. And I know it's difficult in school with the COVID and all this kind of stuff, but it was the same 3 years ago when Evan was in that.
It's probably the same when we were in school, to be fair. I remember I did transition year and we did like a cooking class, and you'd make like sponges and buns and chocolate cake.
That should change.
I know, it's crazy.
We need to get with the 21st century and start, you know, teaching them how to make something a little bit healthier, you know.
I bought a great book actually by Daniel Davey. He's the guy that does nutrition for Leinster in Dublin. Superb.
Yeah.
Really good. And literally during COVID, I'd be just picking a healthy recipe, and they're quick as well. That's the key
thing.
That's
what you want.
20, 30 minutes.
Everyone wants quick.
Perfect.
Yeah. But seriously, in school, they should be teaching kids a bit more about nutritious eating and, you know, how to make a meal or a bolognese. It should be on the curriculum a little bit more than it is. But I think that's where to change things, I think, in school.
And definitely, I think through using sports, you talked about it there in terms of triathlons and jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. I think through teaching people not just the sport, but also the stuff that goes on behind it, like how you should be filling yourself up and how you should be, you know, because everyone wants to be the best, everyone wants to be a winner. You should be teaching them that as well.
Yeah. And I did a talk about 2 years ago with a football team, a Dublin football team. I went one morning to give them a nutrition talk on a Saturday. They invited me over, the coach did. And I started off, it was about 8 o'clock, and I started off by asking the 30 men in the locker room, what did you have for breakfast? And I think about 4 of them actually had breakfast. Mm. And after that talk, they were going straight on the pitch.
Oh, wow.
To train. So I couldn't believe it. And these guys are expected to perform and to have energy all day and to, you know, and I don't know. It was a shock.
Is that something you look to do, is to try kind of educate people as well a little bit on what you're doing?
Where I can. I mean, if I have time, I've gone into a couple of schools and I've showed them actually how to make a healthier treat. I mean, there's loads of fun in rolling balls. So when you're doing a live kind of thing with them and getting them involved and showing them how quick, like there's no baking involved. It's just literally put your ingredients in. For me, it sounds very simple. Put your ingredients in and mix it and then roll them up. And then look, this is so fresh and healthy. And this, you can make these for other people if you want, just to show them that there's something different. Like I said earlier, just to give people an option.
I made date balls at the weekend. They did not look anything like what I'm holding in my hand now, but they are super simple. You don't even have to cook. You just get the dates and the nuts and you blend them all together. It is super simple.
Yeah. If it goes wrong, it's a bit of a disaster, but if you get it right and you get a recipe that you like, they're so simple and handy, and then you can just keep swapping out the flavors. There's always a base and then swap out your flavors. But then the challenge for us, I suppose, going back to the MPD, the development side, was that, you know, for retail, you have to have a certain shelf life on your products. So for us, I mean, anyone can make gorgeous balls at home, Ferrero Rocher balls, cafe mocha, peanut butter, whatever. And then for us in retail, they have to be so fresh. So the quality of standard of hygiene has to be so on point, because these are going to be in a store for whatever length of time until they're bought. So they have to still be fresh. They have to still taste good, not dry out. They have to not obviously grow anything on them. So all of that is a learning curve, and we've learned all that as we go along. So that's our IP, you know, that's really important as well.
So we'll finish up almost in just a couple of minutes. I have two kind of final questions for you. What you've talked about the two new products. So what's kind of exciting you in the next kind of 6 to 12 months for Joe's and for the industry?
There's a whole lot of scope that we can have as a healthier kind of brand. It doesn't have to be balls or snacks. I mean, we'd like to bring out maybe a breakfast option. We'd like to bring out an option for schools, because a lot of schools won't allow nuts. So all of that is in my head as MPD, and that's all ready to go down. We want to add more things onto our online store. My whole concept for the store was that it's a little store you can go to and buy something for your wife for Valentine's or for Mother's Day or Christmas or whatever, because we've got, you know, nice little eco-friendly coffee cups, we've got snacks, we've got books, you know, so to add on to that. So it's kind of a little gift store. Because for me, I mean, any occasion, I never know what to buy anyone, because people have everything, you know.
It's so tough, what especially now as well.
And people are always into kind of buying local and Irish and all that kind of stuff. So it's something like that. There's so much scope for the online store and for our own brand.
And what then, as the final question, what kind of advice would you give to people who are starting off as an entrepreneur or as a food entrepreneur?
I think if you have drive and determination, definitely go for it. Also, you need to have support. You need to have backup. You can't just do it on your own. And if you are on your own, get involved with all of these support groups first, like Dublin Food Chain or whatever your equivalent is down the country or whatever. Contact your local enterprise, because there are things available for companies, even courses on how to start your own company. And then start getting kind of familiar with your space, because if you're going on thinking you're going to do the same as someone else, forget it. It has to be somewhat different. And sometimes you see something and you're thinking, God, they're not really doing a great job on that. I could do something much better. And if that's what you think and that's what you can do, then go for it. But just make sure you've plenty of time, because as soon as you sit still, someone will just jump you, and then you play catch up, or you just kind of get lost in the wind.
Where can people learn a little bit more about yourself and the brand, and what's the online shop?
Our online store is absolutenutrition.ie, and then our handles for Instagram and LinkedIn and stuff are at absnutfoods. It's an abbreviation for Absolute Nutrition. I think it worked out well. And then Joe Davey on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Is that the best place to reach you?
Yeah, or info@absolutenutrition.ie.
Perfect. Joe, thank you so much. It's been fascinating.
It was great. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe. And And that was episode 74 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. Thank you so much for listening. As I said at the start, thank you to all the new listeners and everyone who's been listening from the very start. To add on 1,000 listeners in the last month is huge. We went up 3,000 listeners in the previous month, so we're trending the right way. And that is down to you. So thank you again. If you have any feedback, as I said, I love when people get in touch with me by email or DMs or Twitter. It makes a huge impact and helps me shape the podcast for the future and to keep making it better. I will see you next Monday. Don't forget, every Monday I do the Ideas Lab podcast, which is a short, snappy 10-minute podcast sharing the best ideas, trends and tricks that I've seen for entrepreneur in the previous week. So do get involved with that. There's also an email newsletter that goes with it that lists everything I've talked about on the podcast and gives you links directly to all the articles and companies that I talk about. So you can go to mrgaryfox.com to register for that newsletter. I will see you back here next Monday.